Who can make a sunrise?
Who can make a sunrise?
Sprinkle it with you.
Sprinkle it with you.
Cover it with chocolate and a miracle or two. The Candy Man.
The Candy Man.
Ooh, the Candy Man can.
The Candy Man can.
The Candy Man can, 'cause he mixes it with love and makes the world taste good.
Visit letsdineoutshow.com for podcasts, recipes, and more. That's letsdineoutshow.com.
Welcome back to Let's Dine Out Show, where we're going to be talking candy. I'm food critic Alan Borgen, and with me is John Prince, who is the vice president of CandyFavorites.com, which is the largest distributor of candies in the world, in the universe. You want candy, they got it. Now, one thing I didn't see, and I just, again, I could have missed it. Do you have candies from around the world, for instance, like Mexican candies?
We don't really do a lot of international candies. I mean, it's a niche that we've not really focused on. I mean, from time to time we'll get candies from the United Kingdom, but it's not really, it's not our strength, it's not our focus. I mean, we're an American company. I mean, again, we are the oldest candy wholesaler in North America, so our focus has always been kind of candy that fits into the quote-unquote Americana lore.
Mm-hmm. Now, Gabe, you're from Mexico.
Yes.
And you're my only Hispanic friend I have. Just kidding. I know candy's a big thing in Mexico. And you know, yeah, whenever I go to Mexican markets, I mean, they have some really unusual ones.
Yes, we do. We have a lot of very unusual. And the main thing in Mexican candy is revolving around tamarindo.
So you have the lupis. Tamarind, okay.
Yeah, you have the pelones, you have the pulparinos. All that stuff.
So, no idea what you're talking about, but but you have coke.
I like those candies. I'm familiar with those candies. They're very good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have.
But it's also a very different taste palate too.
Definitely. I mean, you have cacti.
To some people, it's spicy. I guess because we're used to eating it at such a young age. But some people that have never tasted that, they think that that candy is spicy.
Really, I like the cactus ones. I like the coconut ones. I mean, you do a lot of fresh fruit type stuff.
Yes, those are the other ones, and they're colorful. They're like white,
different colors,
and green.
Correct. Right. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now let's get start with pre-1919 candies, and let's go up to the 1920s, because a lot of candies came during this time.
That's true. The 1920s, you know, the Roaring Twenties, as they're commonly referred, were also the Roaring Twenties for the candy industry. I mean, when you look at our timeline, we actually have a timeline on Candy Favorites where you can browse by decades. I think that you're going to find that, you know, the 20s and 30s were really the advent, the great epic of candy production. And ironically, a lot of the stuff is still currently made.
Why do you think so much came out of the 20s?
I don't know. I mean, you could, I guess technology changed. I guess that, you know, it's an interesting question. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I know, like, for example, if you think about, like, just the year 1920. I mean, you had the first retail candy store in Chicago. It was Fannie Mae Candies. So, I mean, obviously the retail landscape was changing, and technology was allowing for more mass production, and it was easier to get commodities. So I guess everything came together, and when you look at the 20s again, I mean, you'll just see amazing products.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of my questions is, because I'm noticing, like, in the 20s, you have the Slim Jim meat snacks, and we eat them here. You know, they sell them at the aisles at the grocery stores. So, are you making the candies the way that they made them back in the 20s, or how, or what's the reason, or how? I guess that's my question, because I saw, like, in the 70s, you have some M&Ms and so forth. So why would somebody want to choose getting the Slim Jim from here and not Walmart? Like, what will make the difference?
Good question, actually. Well, I think that in order to go to Walmart, in some cases, you have to drive to Walmart as opposed to sitting in your house and ordering candy from your sofa. I mean, that's definitely one option. I like to think that because they like me, but I don't think that really comes into the equation. That's a good question. You know, the retail is changing. In the past couple years, we've seen brick-and-mortar stores disappearing. We see the advent of the Internet, you know, reaching a level that no one would have anticipated when 10 years ago, which is a relatively short period of time. And the reality is that a lot of the big box stores carry very generic branding of candy. And this is a complicated issue because candy industries will come into a store and they have what's called a planogram. And they say, you know, we will give you X, Y, and Z to sell these products. So obviously, they're not going to use valuable space and offer an obscure product, something like a Jimmy stick. I mean, outside of Western Pennsylvania, very few people know what a Jimmy stick is, yet it's a product that's made by Mallow Cups. Again, another hard-to-find product.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, is a person going to come to me and buy a Hershey bar? They might. I mean, I don't think that would be the great focus because it's such an easy-to-find product. Is a person going to come to me and buy a dark chocolate Mallow Cup? I assume they, I mean, I hope that they would. But again, I think that the probability is much greater, if only because they're hard to find because they don't fit into the quote-unquote generic corporate mold.
Yeah, these companies have to pay for space, and there's so many candies, it's impossible for them to carry them all. But in the 20s, you know, again, the roaring 20s, you're talking about the Babe Ruth bar. You've got, Charleston Chews. You've got Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. You got Milk Duds. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And these are, you know, these are products that are just as big now as they were then.
Well, if you look at, like, for example, 1920, Hollywood Brands, which was a major, major player, produced something that no one could even would have ever thought possible. It's a candy bar that was called the Double Zero Bar. It's now called the Zero Bar. What made this bar so incredible and such a novelty? It wasn't chocolate. It was made of white fudge. So, obviously, you know, companies like Hollywood Brands don't exist anymore. But the Zero Bar certainly does. Now, is a Zero Bar a popular product, to go back to the original question? Is it a product that isn't popular enough to be in a big box store on a checkout display? No, it definitely isn't. Is it a product that is worth searching for and purchasing? It definitely is.
Right. Now, as you scroll down the 1920s, you see Juju Fruit, you know, the little hard candies. I remember those. Bit of Honeys. They have wrapped oranges. That's the Brock's. They have this is interesting. It's Wax Lips. Now, I remember them, but why in the world would people want lips? I mean, want wax? I mean, that's
well, here's an interesting thing to consider. Now, when we take a question much like you're asking, we're looking at it from a cultural perspective of being in 2018. When Wax Lips came out, first of all, it was a controversial product. Why? Because it was made of wax. It was made of edible, chewable wax.
Okay.
And it was totally outside of the realm of the normal candy bar. Bear in mind, you know, even looking at like the 20s, we're looking at Zero Bars, we're looking at Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, things that by today's standards would be considered quote-unquote everyday normal products.
Right.
Wax Lips, one could argue, was one of the first novelty candies. I mean, it was a product that was edible, and it was sweet, so by definition it's candy, but it was also a novelty, and at that time, it was something else, much like the Pop Rocks were in the 70s.
Exactly.
And I guess it was the 70s when Pop Rocks came out. I mean, a product today, when we think of Pop Rocks, we think of it as just another standard product, and we might think of the lore of Mikey and Life cereal, which is not true, by the way. But when you think about it from a cultural context, in the 1970s, no one saw a product like this. It was so
unique.
It was avant-garde.
Yeah, that's true. We're talking to John Prince, who's the vice president of CandyFavorites.com. It's a really large and fantastic website that has every kind of candy you can think about. And we're talking about candies from the 20s. We're talking Snow Caps. We're talking, again, Milk Duds. We're talking, let's see here, Goobers, Sugar Daddy, the Zero Bars, Butterfingers was invented then.
Wait, don't forget Goldenberg's Peanut Chews. I mean, they're today, as much as they were when they were released in 1922, a cult favorite. That's a East Coast cult favorite.
I was going to say, I've never had those. You also had, Nestle's Raisinets, which every theater in the world has that. Almond Mounds, you have that. O. Henry's, Dots, Milky Way, Chuckles,
But wait, we're
Bubblegum.
Forgetting something.
Oh, the Bubblegum.
Important.
What? Go ahead.
1928.
What was that?
And I think of this as an important year. I mean, not because it's a year after we were established. We were established in 1927. But Admiral Richard Byrd began his legendary Antarctic expedition,
mm-hmm.
equipped with 2.5 tons of what was considered an indestructible calorie. Now, that indestructible calorie we know today as Necco wafers. They actually took NECA wafers on the expedition because NECA wafers are impervious to heat and to cold and pretty much to moisture.
Uh-huh.
And now, arguably, I don't know if I'd want to go 2 months just eating NECA wafers, but I guess it worked for them.
Yeah, those are my favorites when I was younger. I mean, the chocolate ones, those are the ones that stand out the most. But I also see Double Bubble bubble gum. That's like
sure.
the best bubble gum in the world. And I was in Little League and stuff, and that's all we ate. You know, I chewed was that bubble gum. But, during the 20s, it was amazing the different products they had. And, again, Slim Jim came out. It's not quite a candy, but it's a snack. Sugar Daddy, you've got something called Bats. Never heard of that. Banana BB Bats.
BB Bats, sure. They're still made. You know, one of the funny things that I always like to touch on is what happened in 1923. So a person named Peter Paul Halygian, I can't even pronounce his last name, he came up with a product, and he was going to originally call it the Halygian bar, but no one could pronounce it. So it's just now called the Malice Chocolate Bar.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah.
There's little bits of lore, too, let me just interject, that, you know, for example, the Baby Ruth bar. Does anyone know why the Baby Ruth was called that? I mean, it was established in 1923.
Mm-hmm. Is it because of the baseball player?
Nope.
No. I mean, that's the most common answer.
Right.
It was actually named after President Grover Cleveland's daughter.
What? Yeah.
So the 20s are a really interesting time. I mean, again, the 20s and the 30s, they're just, they represent an age of when candy was so, when it was fresh and new. I mean, I often think back to when my grandfather started the company. I mean, he wasn't really selling a commodity. Sure, it was a commodity then, but things kept coming out that, I mean, even by today's standards, 70 years later, or 90 years later, excuse me,
are still
around, and a good majority of the candy bars that were established are still around.
Wow.
Well, that's one of the questions, because I'm noticing on your website, you have the Reese's Nutrageous. I thought those were discontinued. So do you have discontinued candy on your website?
Well, we don't. We probably have some discontinued candy in our basement, but we don't sell discontinued product. And it's interesting. Oh. We will frequently get people who purchase a product, and their first question is, well, I want to know, does this Clark bar taste as good as it did when I had it last in 1945? And, I mean, it's a tough question to answer. But, I mean, you know, the interesting thing about candy is that candy is one of these industries that, you know, to use the expression or phrase, in order to remain constant, it has to constantly change. And formulas change and formulations change.
Right.
Nothing tastes exactly the way it used to, but that's maybe part of the...
Plus our minds sometimes are in a different area, so, you know,
sure.
We kind of, it's impossible to remember things. Like Abba Zaba. Have you ever had Abba Zaba, Gabe?
I think I have, yeah.
Taffy with peanut butter. Oh, man, I mean, just stretch it out.
It's really good.
Yeah, big hunk, stuff like that. So I'll tell you, this is an incredible website, and look forward to have you. Once a month we're going to have you with, I guess the next holiday would be Valentine's Day, and you have a whole section on that. So we'll have you on beginning of February. We'll talk about some decade candies and talk about Valentine's and various options, and we can go from there. How's that sound?
It sounds good. And again, I'm flattered to be asked to be on your program.
We're the lucky ones.
It's a big part of my life, and I hope we can make your listeners enjoy it.
Well, when you find something good, you want to push it, and your website's great. And again, it's candy, for God's sake, so why not? So, again, the name of the website is candyfavorites.com. And go on it. If you're diabetic, they even have sugar-free candy. So they got everything for everybody. So, again, John, thank you so much for it. I know you're living in Pittsburgh. It's a little cold there. I'm not going to mention the 70s, and we have to put air conditioning in our car, but I won't complain until you have problems.
So, sounds good.
Okay, you keep warm, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Sounds good. Take care, my friend.
You're listening to the Let's Sign Out Show right here on AM 590 The Answer, and we'll be right back.